Hello. Ah, now that I've got your attention, I'd like a quick word about how Cambridge 105 Radio is funded. Our job is to give a voice to those groups who may not otherwise be heard. That may be our support for local music or the charity of the month. You're wanting to know how you can help, aren't you? Well, you can support our advertisers. And when you use their services, say you heard about them on Cambridge 105 Radio. And you can make a donation. It all goes towards our upkeep. We're eco-friendly, but we do have a bit of an electricity bill. Visit cambridge105.co.uk and click on the donate button. And thank you for listening.
Well, I have a soldier here, actually. Kathy Sawborough, she is here. She's just come back from the Homeward Bound expedition with lots of other interesting, fantastic women and Al Tautica. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. I got your name right, Sawborough. Thank you. Now, I want to talk about your expedition. But first of all, can we know a little bit about you and what, because you're Cambridge-based, living in Cambridge, you are a neuroscientist.
That's right.
I'm always in awe of any scientists, mathematicians and engineers. But just tell us a little bit about you, if you could.
Yeah, sure. So my background is neuroscience. I did my PhD in Germany and I moved to Cambridge about 3 years ago. So now I actually run a company called the Cheeky Scientist Association. So what we do is we help PhDs and postdocs who are trying to transition out of academia and into an industry career. So we're an industry training platform for these students and academics. And I also chair the Cambridge Association for Women in Science and Engineering.
Sounds very impressive, very impressive. And this is post your degree and your with Cambridge University. So you're obviously liking Cambridge very much.
Yes, that's right.
Right. So now let's tell us a little bit about the expedition. How did you get to know about it and want to go on it? And how actually, because I think it's quite a unique place and you have to apply, is that right, to do it?
That's correct.
So tell us a bit about the expedition.
So me finding out about it was a bit serendipitous. As I do run the Cambridge Association for Women in Science, we had a lecture last year by Deborah Pardo, who was a part of the inaugural voyage of Homeward Bound. And she spoke with such clarity and passion about this journey. And I was sitting in the audience in tears thinking, I have to do this. And I talked to her afterwards and she said, applications for the next year end in 3 days. So I thought, okay, this is it. I have to do this. And it's just one of those moments where you can't talk yourself out of it because there's no time to. There is no imposter syndrome allowed. You just got to do it. And so I did it and I did the application, which was you had to submit your CV, a series of questions about your leadership styles, as well as submitting a 2-minute video about who you are and what you could kind of bring to the ship and to the voyage itself.
That's interesting how you have to submit a video. It's not, and I think more and more people are doing that, aren't they? You have to submit a video so that you have to be a little bit more, promote yourself, I suppose, don't you? And it's a good way of actually recognising what you can do. So that's good. So you did that, and there's always the pressure. It's always good actually to be under pressure to do something. You actually do it, don't you?
Exactly.
So you did that, got through. And you're on your way to the Homeward Bound expedition in the tip of Argentina. Were you nervous?
I was frightened, actually. I don't think it was. I was excited to meet all the women. It was going to be incredible. So there was a 12-month leadership program leading up to the actual departure for Antarctica. So I'd already gotten to know some of the women through online mediums because they're located all over the world. They come from 18 different countries. So we had already bonded online and we got some of the leadership training ahead of time, but there was nothing really to prepare you for being on that ship kind of isolated with these women and then seeing the incredible nature and wildlife that Antarctica had in store. Plus, I had to cross the Drake Passage, which is the ocean that splits the southern tip of Argentina to the South Shetland Islands of Antarctica. And it's known to be the roughest seas in the world because it's the crossing of the two oceans at that point. And I heard stories of 15-meter high waves and the boats being turned over and flipped. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? I get car sick. But it was incredible. And we all bonded together and it was an amazing experience.
And how long was the boat journey then from Argentina to Antarctica?
It took 2 days.
2 days. And then you arrived on Antarctica in, I can't remember which, what was the island that it's called?
So first you arrive to the South Shetland Islands and then to the Antarctic Peninsula itself.
Right. Mm. So once you arrive, what are you living in? What are the conditions? What sort of hut are you living in?
So we stay on the ship and it's a bit like being in first year uni again, because you're in bunk beds and you're sharing a room with another woman, and you go down to the mess for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Everything is very regimented in that sense, and it's very close quarters. But it's surprising how you just adapt to your new normal. All of a sudden, it became normal to be sleeping in a bunk bed, to wake up in the morning, go out on the deck and watch the ocean and see humpback whales. And it was just incredible. So you were in this confined space, and yet it was just such a collaborative and inspiring environment that it just became this new magical normal.
Wow. When you arrived on the first day, as you said, what were the things that you had to do? Am I right in saying that you have lectures on these, on the boats and then on the land as well, and then you go out? What were the first roles that you had to take on board?
Right. So before we departed, we had 2 days in Ushuaia itself in Argentina to start the leadership program, which I think was really essential to kind of build a bond between all of the women before getting onto the ship. And then when we were on the ship itself, half of the day was the leadership program, the workshops, and then half of the day we would do a landing somewhere on shore in Antarctica. And the leadership program spanned a lot of different things. So we talked about visibility, communication, and strategy. And it was very introspective as well, because it was built on the foundation that for us to be able to lead, we need to know more about ourselves, our strengths and weaknesses, and what we could bring to the leadership table. So it was a lot of strategy and a lot of looking at our own behaviors and then what we can deliver to the world.
And I'm sure there were challenges. Did you all find that very hard? Did you have low days as well as high days? And did you learn how to cope with that? Was that something? And I'm sure that was the expectation that you were all given, that it was not going to be one big jolly holiday.
Absolutely. There wasn't a lot of communication to the outside world. So we had satellite phone and really rough internet. So there wasn't really a lot of communication that you could do with family and loved ones. And that was something that we were told before getting on the ship. So a lot of us brought videos and letters from loved ones at home, knowing that we wouldn't be able to speak with them. But of course, you still got homesick. So before getting on the ship, we set ground rules, which were really critical for the voyage. And they might seem kind of silly, but they were so incredibly important. Things like be kind to yourself, have fun, but look after yourself and look after others. Be respectful of yourself and for others. So if there is a day where you just couldn't be present, that was okay. You had to know to be able to take a step back. If you wanted to hang out in your room for a bit, reflect, journal, anything that you need to do to be present for the rest of the voyage. And I think around the halfway mark is when we all kind of had that ugh moment, where I think we've all felt a bit homesick. And so they actually changed the program around to give us an entire day off to kind of reflect and be able to gather the strength to be present for the rest of the voyage. So I think that was really, really important.
When you say no internet, no phone, to me, I'm so used to my phone now and the internet and a screen in front of me. That, I mean, what did you go for? 3 weeks. First day, sort of cold turkey on that, and then maybe how long did it take you? A week, I suppose. But you were working, you had to do things, so your mind was taken up by other things, so it wasn't having to worry about it, I suppose. That,
yeah, it's amazing how you still check your phone even though you know nothing's going to be there. You have no data or no signal, but you check it anyways just in case something magical has appeared on it. But it did take a while to wean myself off of it. But it was amazing how present you can be when that element is taken away. I've never been so focused on a project or on a course before. And I think that's one of the key reasons we did something as bold as going to Antarctica. Not only the fragility of the place and how much it taught us about climate change, but also the fact that If we were sitting in a conference hall in London, we never could have gotten the same experience, the same bonding experience as we could have if we were in such a remote location like Antarctica.
And that's the thing about internet. We so love it, but actually it's so good not to have it sometimes, isn't it? Because it makes you concentrate on what you want to do. So with that, you came in with one perspective, and I'm sure you have left with a whole different perspective. And it's probably what most of us need to do sometimes. But what's your perspective now coming out of this fantastic expedition?
It's interesting. I came to Antarctica with a passion for what was happening in our world in terms of climate change, but I think it was more passive. And now that I've seen everything in Antarctica, I feel like I'm coming back as a climate warrior. I want to be a representative of this land because they don't have any indigenous people. There's no one to speak for the amazing whales and seals and penguins that we saw. So I feel like I was so privileged to go that it's now my responsibility to tell other people about what I've seen and how much it's changed based on the researchers that we met there and the science that I know that happens there now. Mm-hmm. I can tell people that just their small actions day to day can make a huge difference on the planet. And we can see those changes in Antarctica, and it was a beautiful, beautiful place. So for me, it's really exciting. I've come back with all of this hope that I can do so many things.
Actually, talking about that, this is the second year from the Homeward Bound,
yes,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10-year project.
Mm-hmm.
You are the second group of women who have gone along. From the 2 years, the first year it started, the deterioration, obviously the people that are there stationed, do they tell you how much things have changed then, or do you have to go and see it for your own eyes and research it yourself?
They can tell us firsthand about it. So people who, we were very lucky, we got to see the research stations from the UK, Argentina, China, and everybody tells the same story. They would say, there wasn't this much free land here the first time we were here. You know, the ice has left.
Mm.
The migration of the penguins are different. The microplastics that they can now find in Antarctica, which is incredible, because there's no plastic there to begin with. So obviously it's come down from our trash here in North America and South America, has traveled all the way to Antarctica. And that's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, that is. And that's the big issue. Well, one of the big issues at the moment, isn't it? Now, as I said, 10 years, you have a role after this amongst many roles that you sound like you have. But you are mentor for the next generation of women taking up this expedition. What's been the challenge after that then?
I think the challenge after that is to now leverage this collective of women. We are going to have this incredible network of 1,000 women strong. And now it's our responsibility to leverage that and really make a change. Because we all come with this collective idea that we want to do something about climate change, that we want more women in leadership positions, that we want to empower future generations of women to enter leadership positions. So now we have to use our new collective knowledge and go out and do these actions.
Mm. Well, thank you very much, Kathy Sorbrough. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Is there any website that we all need to link onto if there's something? Is it the Homeward Bound website?
Exactly. If you go to homewardboundprojects.au.com, then you can find out about next year's journey. The applications open in a couple of weeks.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Very
Thank
impressed.
You.
And I hope the role continues and the expedition is a successful one, which I know it will be. I don't know why I'm saying it, but it will be. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Now it's time for the travel news.